Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salvis, and we are the Hazmat Guys, bringing you knowledge and insight to make your job a little bit easier and safer.
Let's take a minute to hear about today's sponsors.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct a hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS. You know, Red Wave Technology is a Homeland Security company focused exclusively on bringing innovative solutions to the problems that first responders face. The introduction of the Threat ID allows for identification of solids, liquids, and gases through the interchangeable sampling modules. And this identification of gases includes VOCs, toxic industrial chemicals, and it remains one of the largest gaps in our hazmat toolbox. The Threat ID bridges that gap and provides an identification of toxic, dangerous gases with the same ease that FTIR has brought to solids and liquids. For more information, check out redwavetech.com.
Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hazmat Guys, episode 298. I'm counting down the last two before Mike takes over the intros and ha.
That's right. Forgot about that.
We're getting there, and it's going to be Mike's melodic voice taking you into the new scene.
So. Hello, everybody.
Yeah. but once again, conferences coming up, they really haven't changed. This year is going to be finishing up Virginia, Cold Zone, and the Massachusetts creme de la creme at the Pebble.
Yeah, at the Pebble. It is still at the Pebble, right?
At the Pebble. This is the last year. So yes. If you want to come and touch it or do something to it, by all means, go ahead and do it. But I was just like, we were 51 seconds into the show, 56 seconds ago, we were just talking about what is happening on episode 300, and there's going to be some major changes in how we are doing the show.
Yep.
And it's all good, exciting, more stuff.
I will now be doing the show while juggling both flames, oxidizers, and fuels.
Yes, and watch the tetrahedron take off. but yeah, and if also, if you're not seeing it, we are doing these things for right now on YouTube Live, so you can actually see us do these things. And this is kind of a flat version of it, but this is going to get much, much cooler. And that is kind of like a meeting me and Mike have tomorrow to discuss where we're going with this.
Hey, you know what?
What?
Why don't we ask the audience? If anybody out there has any idea how to combat a YouTube
that's a good idea.
Copyright infringement thing that we are not copywriting infringing on anything because we own certain things,
yeah,
please
let
us know.
Some clown keeps making a copyright infringement on a sound. It goes, wow. It's like, that's your copyright. I need to see your
tone. A tone. Yeah. You're copywriting a tone.
And it's such a stupid process. If you have any experience, reach out to us, info at the Hazmat Guys, and we're going to pick your brain for 2 minutes and
yes.
help a brother out. All right. So
last week.
Yes. Last week we went into what happens when things go wrong. And right. I think we kind of focused on like the communication part.
We totally focused on the communication part. And it was actually a really big eureka moment for myself where, you know, for so long, I've always kind of battled this, like hazmat and the fire service. It's like the square peg round hole. And like for the first time ever, like I feel like two pieces actually came together and made sense over the whole like the concept of a hazmat mayday, which is going to just be a whole nother ball game in and of itself. And yes. I don't even think we're going to start to go down that road because that road is going to be complicated. I think it's going to we're going to make it simple, but getting there is going to be complicated.
I agree.
What I would like to stay on path with is the original concept of what last week's show was, which is, you know, can we plan for the shit to hit the fan, right? And we drill on how to do things. And, you know, if you're in the fire service, especially if you're in kind of like the specialized units, you know, that is really where I see a lot of the SOC units step above regular fire companies, right? Is that they drill and live in those oh shit moments.
Right. They and plan.
They plan. And I mean, man, they plan. Like when Bob was in squad, I literally watched them every tour. Plan for the worst. Plan for the worst. Plan for the worst. So how can we start to do that as hazmat? How can we take that same attitude of, okay, right, there's nobody else coming in after us, right? That's kind of a concept right. that we always have. There is no special operations hazmat coming in to fix something that goes sideways. So we are it. We really have to start to embrace that idea, that concept, and that training that, you know, the fire end has with its special operations and its rescues and all that stuff. And if you're in a different part of the country, a rescue is not the ambulance. The rescue is the, I don't know, how would you describe what it is that I'm referring to?
It's like the SWAT team to the police department.
Yeah.
It's the guys that get the guys out. It's right. It's the firefighter savers.
Okay, so it's that kind of level of stuff. So when we were coming up with this concept for a show, we were like, well, I wonder if we can take other sorts of, I'd say models of how to plan for an emergency and see if it applies to any of the hazmat. And a lot of the if then type of stuff for emergency management, It, when you do research, it lands within the business world. So we have some points to hit that are of the business world, of the kind of like that corporate world, you know, I guess if, you know, don't want to embarrass the corporate, you know, like anything, finance, advertising, anything could go wrong. Can we take that and apply it to hazmat? Are there lessons in other industries that we can apply to our world?
Okay. All right. I like it.
All right. So one of the first things that was found, you know, there's all these acronyms for emergency management within the business world. And one of the first ones I'm looking at here is assess, right? We have to, anytime something goes wrong, you have to assess the situation. Yes. And one of the things here, I'm reading right from it, it says, take a reasonable amount of time to accurately assess the situation. Fight every instinct to react or to overreact. First, take a step back. Take a few deep breaths. Whatever it takes to restore your calm so you can think clearly. Then get all the facts, get the objective guidance, and develop a clear picture of the situation. So, what of that can we say applies? What if it doesn't apply? And of the stuff that doesn't apply, can we train ourselves before an emergency to be able to make it apply?
Of the whole statement, I would say the word first is the only thing that really applies.
I don't know. I think there's no, a couple of takeaways.
There's a couple of things.
There's a couple of things.
Yeah. So, all right. So the funny thing is like And this is a real story. Like, when I first got into the fire department, of course, me and Mike were firefighters, and now we're hazmat guys. But when I was 18, I joined the volunteer fire department. I remember going to my first structure fire, and there was this guy named Rudy Havelka, who was standing next to me. He probably had 35, 40 years in the company. And I am just like saucer-eyed, like, holy crap, this is a fire. And I am so tunnel visioned in on this thing. And he's walking up to the scene and he's going, okay, wind's coming from the southwest. There's three mailboxes on our front. We have a hydrant 60 feet down. There's two ground ladders to the left. There's two to the right. And I'm looking at this guy like, what is this guy rambling? And 10 years later, I finally go, he was doing what I should have been doing. He was soaking it all in.
Taking it in.
Right? And I was this young bop of a rookie. I was focused on flames and look at the shiny, right? And I wasn't really taking it in. And so I will say that on the other, you know, and that's a good story, right? But this story is another one that kind of contrasts this thing, is that my wife works in finance, right? And she will take a month to think about, you know, how to open, how to open up the refrigerator and get lunch. Where me, I will buy a car over the phone. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have no problem taking tremendous, like, and people go, you shoot from the hip, and you don't really think, you're reckless. And I'm like, I take in all the information in a half a second and I can make a decision.
I have people tell me, you think too big and react too quickly.
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't know any other way, because I've just, like, what, how much longer you want me to sit and think about this? Like, I've got all the information. I'm just going to do it.
It's almost like, how does that professional baseball player hit that 100-mile-an-hour baseball? It's because he's practiced it over and over and over and over and over. And it's, to him, it's seriously nothing. It's a lob.
So we practice. Right. That's where this is a little bit different, right? So your wife, she does this as it says verbatim, takes a reasonable amount of time to accurately assess
she
the information.
Does that. Yes.
We have to do the same thing, but we have to do it prior to the emergency ever happening.
I'm going to add in more complexity to it. Just like my analogy with the baseball player, he knows it's coming from pitcher's hand to catcher's mitt, from point A to point B.
Right.
Every single time it's coming that way. With us, for anybody to be like, oh, it's a methyl isocyanate, it's a flammable, it's a liquid. They are coming from any which way through that box. They can be coming from behind you, above you, below you. And so the shots are never the same. And that's why it has – I don't mean to discount fire, but I think I have the cred to say I do know the fire side. Fire is much, much, much more one-dimensional than hazmat is. Hazmat is it's 4D.
It is, because that it depends answer becomes really complicated at
times. There's so many dimensions. If I'm going to a fire, what gear am I wearing? Bunker
fire gear.
What am I putting on my face if the IDLH comes up? My SCBA. It is a linear progression of what variability you determine by how hard you push in.
Right.
In hazmat, there is six variables for every aspect. And when you do that math and you start saying, it's six times six times six times six, and you're like, holy crap, there's like 400,000 variables, and I haven't even talked about chemicals.
Yeah.
I haven't even talked about it.
So that reasonable amount of time has to be done on the drill floor, right? Like you have to run through the different scenarios ahead of time, which is impossible because you really don't know what the base scenario is going to be on your next run. But
you can give the same scenario to the same guys and do it five different ways.
Yeah.
With the exact same parameters, you can go, well, I can do it this way. I can do it this way. Totally.
So at what point, And I do believe we talk about this in one of the lectures. The line here, fight every instinct to react or to overreact. Take a step back. Take a few deep breaths. We talk about the 30-80 rule or 30-70.
330 rule. That's an old rule that I think was – somebody's going to call me out. I believe it went out of business in like 93 though. Or maybe it came in 93.
No, I think that's a PPE thing, isn't it? This one is if you're making a decision.
Oh, with a 30-70 rule.
30-70. Yeah. Where if you have between 30% and 70% of all the information.
That's a sweet spot.
That's a sweet spot to make a decision. If you don't have 30%, right. Yep. And 70, you waited too long.
Yep. That's absolutely true. So that's where I think that's where the hazmat huddle comes in.
Yes. Yeah, because
that's our pause button.
Yep. You can gather all that information. You can have somewhere between 30 and 70% at the hazmat huddle.
Yeah. I think it's even more important because, like, and again, I know if anybody that's not in fire service, I apologize, but you got to kind of understand when we're going up, let's say there's six guys going up to an operation and all six guys are looking at the scenario from their lens and their objectives, right? But in hazmat, there's six guys going up, all looking through their lens for the same objective, right? And so
with different perspectives,
right? So now I might be on the roof and I'm thinking about this. I will never consult with the guy that's going inside or the boss or whatever because his input is inconsequential to me. My operation is basically a linear movement. Whereas if I'm looking at this from the point of view of a chemist, let's say, and Mike's looking at a point of view of plumbing, and this guy's looking at a point of view of communications, well, now when we hit that pause button and we have that huddle, I think that's where the collaboration truly begins. And I think if you are performing your hazmat huddle, you don't even know all the impact. It's like when you're driving down a road on like New Year's night and you don't even know how many times you almost got killed from a drunk driver.
Yeah.
You know, like when you have that hazmat huddle, you are seriously avoiding all the drunk drivers on the road because we're thinking, we're talking.
And I think that's a good use of time.
Absolutely.
In an emergency.
Probably the best.
That is definitely, if something goes sideways and you're not consulting with your team as a whole, you are wasting, it's no longer reasonable time.
You know, when you're out there facing the unknown, you want the MX908 in your toolkit. Now it's packed with the sensitivity and selectivity of high pressure mass spectrometry. This is a detection device that fits right in your hands. You can detect and identify chemical targets from street drugs to explosives and ticks to chemical warfare agents, including Novichoks, all with the same tool. The MX908 can detect and identify threats in any state and is now the only field tool available for real-time aerosol analysis. The MX908 gives you the rapid, actionable intelligence you need to make decisions faster and ensure the safety of everybody involved. To get more information about the MX908, including technical papers, video demos, and target lists, go to info.908devices.com/hazmat, and then hazmat is all in one word. With the MX908, you get real-time detection of real-time threats. Check it out at info.908devices.com/hazmat. Right. And you know, when that hazmat huddles, don't be in a rush to get out of it. Like, let's go, let's get in suits. That's when I would say, and I don't remember exactly what it said, it was to take a step back, take a deep breath. Give somebody that point of where he's like, I don't know if I should really say anything. You know what? I'm going to say something because you were maybe ran by him.
Yeah. And that you can't, just as a side note, you can't start that attitude on the run. Like
what?
Everybody knows that we do this, the whole sign off thing. And we've talked extensively about how we do it. And I have, there a couple of guys have made a few comments very, very recently during the sign-offs that were like, oh, I really didn't think like I could ask a question. And I get very frustrated when one of our guys says that to me at the end of somebody else's sign off. I just got signed off. I really didn't think it was appropriate for me to ask a question. And I'm like, if that attitude isn't corrected in the firehouse, on the drill, when you're doing something, where, like, I can't trust that you're going to speak up when I need you to speak up.
Right.
Right? Like, you're quiet now because what, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. Well, what if it's my feelings that you don't want to hurt because it goes against what I think. I'm right. Like, you're useless to me.
Call
Stop.
Me out.
Call me out on it. Like, that attitude of everybody's voice means something. I know it sounds all like millennial and safe place and all that other crap.
But not everybody.
Not everybody. Yeah, most most people.
over there. Get some coffee.
There's always one. Right. Yeah, go get a Kool-Aid.
Yeah, go cut the crumb.
But that attitude starts in the company before the run ever goes off, where it's like, no, like, I want your input. No, argue with me. Like, I'll say stupid shit just so somebody could be like, that's the dumbest shit I ever heard. And yes. I'm like, thank you. Thank you for freaking, like,
calling me out.
And because this is what we need. So, yeah, that absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more, Bob. And it is not just on scene. That attitude has to start right from the get-go, or you will not have a team or structure that you can rely on in any way, shape, or form. That is just bottom line.
The practice has to be practiced.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty much what it is, because like Mike was saying, it's that when we're practicing in the fire service and we're doing these, maybe you're just doing basic operations, throwing a ground ladder, stretching lines. But, you know, when I was in the rescue side of it, it was, we practiced for all the eventualities that would happen that would be way outside the parameters of a regular company to even conceptualize. Like, right. We would do six different ways of them. Like, we would seriously task people to screw up the system, and then we'd figure out five ways to unscrew that system. And it got to the point where there was so many different variables that it was crazy.
I watched you guys one day do a firefighter removal drill from the basement, and you redid it like three or four times. And one of the guys, you know, they picked him up by both the legs, and you guys brought him up out. Everyone's like, da, da, da. And then the senior guy working was like, okay, let's do it again. But now he already lost a leg.
Yeah, right.
Like, you can't touch his left leg. Do it again.
Right. Right. Like, yeah.
Every possible scenario.
But the thing is that you can, I don't think us and Hazmat could ever do all of these scenarios. That's where it's impossible.
No, but we have to be drilling differently, right? We have to be challenging our thought process, because we have to be taking our foundation, our chemical physical properties, right? Because the chemical physical properties, and I know I've fallen in love with the GETMO, the behavior model that GETMO, we did, like,
yeah.
The 10 episodes on. But like, if you can drill that, and if you can drill in such a way where your tabletopping thought process exercises, okay, this is my release, this is my behavior, this is what I expect. Now change something, make something go wrong, make it go worse. Let's play out what happens. You do that over and over again, that starts to become how you think. So now when something goes wrong, it's a lot easier because you've already trained in that mindset. And I think that's where time needs to be spent before something goes wrong, is understanding chemical physical properties really well, understanding behavior model really well, and understanding cause and effect, so that when something goes wrong, you're already one step ahead of what does this mean and how am I going to react?
I think a lot of people, and based upon my recent interaction with people in a class I just took, is that there was quite a few people in the class. I'm going to say there was 9 people in the class, and 6 of them already knew who I was.
Okay.
And we were doing these scenarios, and they basically broke the class into 2 teams. And I would be like, well, look at this hump, and this is the OH hump and the EFTIR, and da, da. And they're like, you guys just are so matter of fact with this. You know, we can't ever get to that point. And I'm like, no, that's not true. I'm like, yes, I am very, maybe I'm a little bit more unique because this is all I do. I said, but anybody that wants anything can do it.
They could do it.
You can do it. And all you got to do is listen to the shows. Like if you start, don't do it. Don't go back to episode 1.
Yeah. No,
I'm almost ashamed 8. To say listen to 1.
8. Started 8. 8, started I felt 8. Like, you know, we're like 8 weeks into.
Dude, you know how long it took me to edit episode 1? Was like 8 hours to episode a half hour.
I remember. We every were little, cutting out every
little gum flick. Yeah. Like that. It was gone. I was like,
I could now. I could literally probably have a lower GI bleed while we're doing the show, like, and it will make it on air.
Absolutely. We do it all the time. I don't edit anything anymore. Like, unless something major, like a car crash through the house, I'm like, all right, I'll take the half on out. Anywho.
It's doable.
You boil down these things, like these concepts, and even if you like, oh my God, I can't memorize all these different variables, I came back with a couple of points of reference, like a couple of just like cheat sheets and that I never even conceptualized. And I'm like, these are brilliant and I've never seen them. So, I mean, there is stuff out there that is next level and you might think it's, who cares? No, man, like that's good stuff and share it. And
it's the difference between like, next, right? We say next level. Sometimes we sit and guys will be like, well, what do I really need to know that for? Right? What do I really need to know that for? And it's like, you know what? You're 100% right. You don't need to know it. In to do the job at hand, for me to go in and pick up oil or to neutralize an acid or to do whatever it is that we're doing, you probably don't need to know it. But when something goes wrong, and you're trying to figure out why something went wrong, you need to have that next level of understanding. And that's the time spent before. The time spent before is becoming master of your tools, your equipment, your chemical physical properties, your behavior model guides, and then being able to apply it in and out of the box way.
Yeah. You know what the funny thing is? You'll see, let's say statistically, we do 70% of our runs are hydrocarbon spills, right? 60%.
That's reasonable.
And there's guys that they're very comfortable with it and it's mundane. And those are those guys that Mike are talking about. You know, why do we got to know about, you know, I'm making up some crazy, you know, flaring off a butanol with a, you know, cis trans. I can say that on the show. There is cis and there's trans in chemistry, so suck it.
You can't label it. You have to ask.
Yes, you can't. Yes. Yeah, you have to ask. You can't assume it's a cis or a trans. But the funny thing is typically those people that discount that 20% of the operation that we don't go commonly, that they don't put any time or effort in there. They get very quiet when those things happen. And that's when the guys that really expand and challenge themselves, the team, to expand their horizons in not only training, but just comprehension. There's some, if you go back and listen to the entire catalog, and please don't do it because it will take forever. It's like we're coming up with 300 episodes. I will guarantee you these concepts that you've never even considered because there was concepts in there we went through that I never considered.
Yeah. And there's people that are on the show from different parts of the country that have concepts that neither one of us had even heard of, knew nothing about. We're like, really?
Yeah, like this is every day for us. Like, and I'll give you an example. Like, neutron sources with the our boy Matt.
Yeah,
with the lead shot. Go back and listen to that one. There, with Dr. Christina Baxter, when we started talking about vertical buildings, and she never thought about it being vertical as opposed to horizontal.
Right.
There is many things.
Jim Davis with that crazy contraption they have.
Yes.
For identifying some, uses radiation.
How was it? It was, yeah. You got to listen to that one. That was crazy.
I mean, there's so much stuff out there. It's planning, it's pre-planning, it's doing, it's understanding the chemical physical properties. And we literally just talked about one little sliver of all these different ways to handle an emergency. It's applicable. The different steps that are out there are 100% applicable. You just have to understand how it translates to our world. What is reasonable time? What is access? What is planning? What is engaging the stakeholders? All these things, it applies to us. We just have to be in all of our training has to be done. We have to understand. We have to have a clear knowledge. We have to be able to communicate. There is so much to do in such a short period of time when something goes wrong, that if we don't do it ahead of time, man, it's not going to go well.
Onward and upward.
Woohoo!
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys, and take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484.
And we are always looking forward to your feedback about information or interesting incidents that you were a part of, so send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.